Tokyo Podcast Episode Number 7.
Hey everybody, big show today. I'm going to talk about my new iPhone 4S, my amazing race to the dentist, and what's got to be the funnest, most enjoyable way to learn Japanese. Hey everybody, welcome to Tokyo Podcast. I am Anthony Joe, and on today's show, I'm going to be talking to a gentleman named Richard Graham, who runs a website called GenkiJapan.net. And if you've done a search on YouTube for learning Japanese videos, I'm sure you've seen many of his Genki videos. And what he does is, he has these videos that makes the learning process as easy and as fun as possible. They kind of look a little bit childish, because many of them are games and songs, but actually, you'd be surprised at how useful they are in learning a language. It seems that music, when you add text to music, it seems to retain in your memory a lot faster than just reciting it or trying to memorize it by a book. I'm sure everyone here has a song in their iTunes playlist that isn't in your native language that you sing along to. You don't have no idea what the lyrics are or what it means, but you can sing along to it. How is that possible? Well, Richard's here to talk about that and how his programs help people learn Japanese. That's going to be a little bit later on the show. But first, I want to talk about my recent Amazing Race-style adventure to the dentist. For those of you who don't know, Amazing Race is this television show in America where they send contestants all around the world and they have to find all these hidden clues. And it's like a little obstacle course where they need to get from one end, point A to point B, and they need to find clues along the way. So there might be a little flag hidden on top of a telephone pole or a key or something they have to find. And it's really fun to watch these people kind of struggle to find these things in a foreign country. Well, recently I was eating one of the mini soft candies that they have here that are so good. This particular one's called Bontan Ame, and it's an older candy. And what happened is it's really sticky, so it pulled the crown off my tooth. So I was eating this thing, all of a sudden, wow, that doesn't feel too good. And I noticed that the crown had completely popped off my tooth. And if you've ever had any dental work done, you know that crowns are really expensive. I think these things were about $1,200 when I got them in Canada. So, I've been in Japan for, 3 weeks at this point. So the thought of spending another $1,200 to get this thing fixed didn't exactly thrill me. And besides, I didn't know how to get this thing fixed. I don't have any medical insurance here yet, and I don't know any dentists. So I did a quick search online. I went to Gaijin Pot, kind of poked around to see if anyone had a recommendation for English-speaking dentist, and I found a lady named Dr. Naoko Freeman, who many people seem to recommend. So I quickly phoned her and I said, "Look, there's any way you can fit me in tomorrow? And you really need to get this crown put back on, or get a new crown." I wasn't quite sure if they'd be able to fix it or not. And she said, "Yeah, we're really busy, but we can slot you in at 3:00. If you can't make it tomorrow, it's next week." And I didn't want to be, a whole week without my crown. So I had to figure out how to get to her office. And her office is a little ways outside of Tokyo. And so I had to take 2 or 3 trains. And I got lost in one of the train stations. And it was so funny. I got kind of lost and I had my iPhone out and I was trying to match the kanji up to the train line that I had to take. And I couldn't find it. And this old guy was standing beside me and he asked me, where I wanted to go. And I kind of showed him the kanji on my phone. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, follow me." And he walked me all the way through the train station to this other train line and showed me where I had to go. And I felt really bad because he had to walk all the way back to get on his train. But I get to the station where nearest her office, and I get out and I'm following kind of the directions on her website, and I get to where her office is supposed to be, and it's 3:00 on the dot at this point, and I can't see it anywhere. I'm looking all around, trying to look for anything that looks like a dentist's office, looks like a tooth sign or anything like that, and then finally I spot this small sign tucked way up on the staircase that says dentist. And so I run up there, go in there, and made my appointment. And I gotta say, Dr. Freeman was fantastic. Her English is great. She studied in Australia. She was really great. She managed to fix my tooth, put the crown back on, glued it down, and really, really helped me out in a tough spot. So if you are looking for an English-speaking dentist in Tokyo, I would definitely recommend her service. Her website can be found at ihani.com, and I'll post a link to her website as well as kind of a pictures on how to get to her office on my website as well, because it's a little bit confusing to find. A couple other things I wanted to mention that are going on in Tokyo this week. One is the Tokyo International Film Festival opens today, and it runs from October 22nd to the 30th. All sorts of films are going to be shown there, many international films. And if you want to go check that out, that's happening at the Roppongi Hills Minato City Theater. And their website is tiff-jp.net. Really cool to see all these foreign and international films coming here. And the theme of this film festival is kind of help Japan kind of get back on its feet after the earthquake. So if you're interested in film, go check that out. If you're interested in anime, the Tokyo International Anime Festival is also going to be happening this month, starting on October 27th. It's only for 2 days, October 27th, 28th. And it's at the Akihabara UDX Akita Square. And get your anime costume on, get your cosplay on, and go check that out. If you want more information on that, their website is tiaf.jp. Well, I am extremely pleased to welcome my guest today to start our Japanese language series. His name is Mr. Richard Graham, and he is the owner of a website called GenkiJapan.net, which offers a lot of unique ways of learning Japanese. As you know, studying a language can be very difficult, and what's fascinating about Mr. Graham's website is that he has all these fun games that make learning Japanese exciting and fun. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Now, you're our first guest on our Thai language series, or sorry,
Japanese language series.
Wow, when you do 70 shows of the Bangkok podcast, that kind of gets ingrained a little bit. And so I was wondering if you could just tell our audience a little bit about your background and how you got to Japan, what brought you here, and how you started learning the language.
Cool. Well, I was at uni in England doing physics. And part of that degree, I spent a year abroad in France, which was really cool. And then when I graduated, I wanted to go off and go somewhere else again. And because I'd done physics, I actually wanted to join the Japanese space program, because at that time they were recruiting foreigners before all the rockets blew up and everything. But you needed Japanese. So I looked around trying to find a way to learn Japanese, and I figured that going on the JET program to Japan would be the best way to do it, and also get paid as well, you know, pay off student loans and stuff. So that's what I did. I came to Japan on the JET program in 1997, which is quite a long while ago, with zero Japanese. And then just using the techniques and stuff that I'd learned before. I was teaching like science, and I was on NHK TV within a year or so. And then I ended up not going in the space program, but I ended up spending 3 years on the JET program. And then afterwards started my own business in Japan.
Wow, that's interesting. Very rarely do I hear people say they come to Japan to get into the space program. You know, most of them are like, I like anime or some kind of martial art, and they just want to hang out for a while. But you actually came here to try to get into the space program.
I did. Well, that's the problem of being British, you see. Because if you're American, you've got NASA and everything. Yeah. If you're British, right, all we've got is ladders. Yeah, we don't go anywhere. So that's what I figured I was gonna go and do. That's what I really wanted at that time. And of course you need a Japanese to get in there.
So let me ask you then, what was it like when you first got here, dealing with the language? Was it difficult?
Wait, I always go with the mindset that learning a language is easy. If something that a lot of people can do, I call it easy. And if it's something not many people can do, that's difficult. So, you know, you always get the mindset of learning a language and approaching it from being easy. You know, there are lots of really stupid people back home who speak, you know, fluent English, so everyone in Japan can learn English. And it's the same for us as well. Lots of really stupid people in Japan who speak fluent Japanese. So, you know, lots of really clever people as well. I'm going to get into trouble for that, aren't I?
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So going to the thought that it's easy. And I was actually sent down to Shikoku, to Ehime, which is really in the middle of nowhere. So nobody, you know, there's maybe a couple of English teachers in the town who spoke a bit of English, but nobody really spoke English. So I was thrown in there. But it was just a case of, yeah, just using the techniques and things I'd learned before and just going in with a positive attitude, really. And of course, being it was summertime in Japan, so lots of beer certainly helped as well.
It's amazing how sake and beer help with the language.
Absolutely. I tell you, this is one thing. You know, if you want to get, if Japan wanted to get everybody speaking English or everyone wanted to learn Japanese, you just get everybody really drunk and they'd be fluent for a few hours. Then it'd all go terribly wrong. But
you know what's funny is in Bangkok, I did language exchange with some Japanese people there because Bangkok has a large Japanese population. And in anticipation for my move here, I started doing language exchange with some Japanese people. And it was funny. I did notice that, you know, after a lesson, we'd go have some dinner. And after a few bottles of beer, I would notice that their shyness would disappear and their language abilities got a whole lot better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's especially true for Japan because people are told here that when they learn a language, you know, making mistakes is bad.
Right.
And they shouldn't try, and you shouldn't try and force yourself and stuff. So then when they're drunk, they forget all these rules they learned at school, and they just try and speak it, and it comes out naturally, which is what you want really, isn't it?
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of funny how that happened. I used to joke with my students. I said, don't worry about it. Just next time you have to speak English, get drunk first, and you'll be fine. So you mentioned that you said, you know, you got some study techniques from before. What study techniques did you use to learn the language?
Well, I think the first sort of two, I think for anybody learning a language, the first two things are is find it, rather than just getting a textbook and working your way through it, because I write textbooks and stuff, and it's really, really difficult to write a textbook that fits everybody. And you try and make it a standard, but then it ends up being like McDonald's, you know, where it's sort of OK, but it's very fixed and stuff. So I think one of the first things to learn is figure exactly what you want to learn. You know, what language do you want to be able to speak? What phrases, what words, what situations? And if you really narrow that down to quite a small list, you know, every day we only use a really small amount of language. And if you really narrow it down exactly what you need and make a list of that in English and then, you know, figure out how to say it in Japanese with a teacher or whatever, I think that's one really good trick. And then the second part of that is find your own style of learning and actually how you learn best. You know, traditionally languages were taught by using books and things because that's all we had 100 years ago. But, you know, now if you learn by songs, you learn by song, get some songs and learn it. If you learn by video games, get some video games and play those in Japanese or whatever. If you like manga, you know, read manga in Japanese. Whatever your passion is, what you normally be doing in English, if you do that in Japanese, but focusing on this very specific set of language that you want to learn, that's a really quick way to getting in and getting your confidence high and getting a really good core of language that you can build on later.
Right, because I remember you posted something on I can't remember if it was a video or a blog entry where you had to give a speech in physics, I believe, in Japanese within a very short time after you arrived here. Is that correct?
I was teaching. Well, when I first arrived, they put me when I was in junior high school. They put me teaching English, and I absolutely hated it in junior high. But so I taught science instead.
Right.
So we got this link up with this NASA project, and we would take this data from a NASA satellite going around the moon and get the data and analyze it. And I thought, this is cool. And the kids thought it was cool. And I thought, great, let's do this course. And I got approval somehow. And we were going to do it all in English. And it didn't work. So I had to very quickly learn how to do it in Japanese. And then because of that, it got quite a lot of press coverage and stuff. And I got invited to present at a national science conference in Japanese. Which was a little bit scary.
And how long had you been in the country at that point?
I'd actually been there a few months by the time that happened, yeah.
But so still, a few months, and then you have to speak in front of a science conference? That must have been a little bit nerve-wracking.
Well, it is, but you if you know your average scientist, your average scientist communication skills are not that good anyway. So if you can just say any sentence and just say keredomo at the end of it, then you're sort of fine. I know, chotto, and all that sort of business. So they just put a few posh science words in there and you're all sorted.
That's interesting. I'll have to try that.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest pressure when I did was when I was doing NHK, because I was invited to do that, a show on there every week. And it started off just being really simple, talking about, you know, can you use chopsticks sort of stuff and being a foreigner in Japan. And so we kept going every week. We kept getting new topics and they'd start bringing up things like politics and stuff like this. And I no idea about politics in Japan. I had no idea about any of the words or any of the, you know, the shugi and everything they were talking about. I was like, what? So we had 30 minutes before, and that really kicked in the adrenaline of having to learn the words that they were talking about and then what words I want to use in my response. So just giving yourself really tight deadlines with a lot of adrenaline really helps as well.
Yeah, going on national TV and running the risk of making a fool out of yourself really helps the motivation to learn a language, I suppose.
It does. I mean, this wasn't quite nationally. It was over several prefectures, but right. It was pretty nerve-wracking. Yeah. So, I think that's the thing is, if you just go along every day without a real sort of kick up the backside or a real carrot, a real reward at the end of it, then you don't do a fraction of what you could do. If you've got a real mechanism in there to, you know, real deadline or something really pushing you along, you can do it 100 times faster than you think.
Right. That's a good point, you know, because I noticed that with many of my Japanese friends studying English, they would study diligently, but they would never put themselves in a situation where they had to speak it. Right. They would have brief, maybe conversations a little bit here and there, but they were never in a situation that kind of forced them to think on their feet quickly in English. And I would have, we would have these Bangkok podcast parties every few months. And I would always invite all my Japanese friends to come, and they were just terrified. The first question they always asked me is, are other Japanese coming? And I would always reassure them that others were coming. And they were terrified to be in a position where they had to suddenly speak English. Even though they could speak it fine in kind of a controlled environment. But, you know, once they came there and they got a few beers or a few glasses of wine in them, they were fine. And always afterwards, they would always thank me and say, wow, I couldn't believe I was able to do that.
Cool. There you go.
So I really agree that, you know, studying by textbook continuously without that kind of fear put into you or putting you on the spot doesn't really work as well as, you know, being forced to think on your feet.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you got the time, you know, if you're doing a 3-year degree or something like that, and you want to spend the time and be really in depth and all that stuff, then that's fair enough. But I mean, I think for most of us, I've only got 24 hours in the day. I've never got enough time, so I just want to find ways of just shrinking things down and getting what I need to know and what I need to be able to do done in as quick a time as possible.
Okay, well, let me ask you then, though. Your audience on your YouTube channel is obviously worldwide. So what would you say to someone who's in, say, in England or in America, and they don't have a lot of Japanese around them, but they're studying it? How can they kind of accelerate the process?
Right. Well, I think if you'd asked me this 15 years ago, I would have said you have to come to Japan. But the thing is, now it's possible to live in the UK or America. I mean, I've got friends, Japanese friends in America who never speak English. They're just completely in a Japanese bubble all the time because they watch NHK and they watch Japanese YouTube and they get the Nikkei Shimbun and they just go to ramen shops where the Japanese people speak them in Japanese. So I think these days, because of the internet and stuff, you can, if you want to, it's a case of how much you want to, you can immerse yourself completely in a Japanese environment. So you can get on YouTube and you can see all the clips of Japanese TV shows, and they're all jumaku. They've all got the subtitles on the bottom there, so that's right. Good. And then sites like it's Live Mocha, isn't it? I keep calling it Cafe Mocha, but it's not. It's Live Mocha, isn't it? Yeah, the exchange site there for you can go on and you can find a language exchange partner.
Okay.
Or just generally, if you can Skype up with get online and Skype up with some Japanese people and do language exchanges that way, it's perfectly possible to learn a language wherever you are. You know, if you're in Kiribati and you haven't got a very good internet connection, then fair enough. If you've got a good internet connection in a Western country, then if you want to learn Japanese, then there's loads of ways of doing it.
Right. I guess, yeah, that's one good thing about the internet is it really has brought language learning, a lot closer to what it was, like you said, 15 years ago. 15 years ago, you would have had to hop on an airplane to come to Japan.
Absolutely.
Now you can just fire up your computer and be talking to native Japanese speakers within a few minutes.
Yep. And also, so even the native speaker thing, I think that's the sort of the second step. And then the first step is just to get some really good audio courses. If you're into learning by audio, obviously your podcast is going to have some great stuff on it, I hope. And things like the Michelle Thomas course, I really recommend Michelle Thomas. If you can afford it, Pimsleur is also really good as well. And you can buy those online and listen to those on your iPhone or whatever as well. And those are really good courses to get you started. And then once you've got the basics, then you can start doing all the language exchanges and things using the exchange websites.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What are your thoughts on Pimsleur and Michelle Thomas? If someone were to buy that, the whole Pimsleur course and listen to the whole thing, what do you think their level of Japanese would be?
Yeah, the actual, if the language they know, they'll be really good at what they know. So they'll be really good in quite a narrow niche.
Right.
But what I think, especially the Michelle Thomas one, I mean, I much prefer the Michelle Thomas one to the Pimsleur one. Because the problem with Pimsleur Japanese is they sort of copied the curriculum from the European language one. So it sometimes goes off into stuff that you don't really say in Japanese, which is a bit of a problem. But it's pretty good. But I think, especially with the Michelle Thomas one, is they focus on, rather than learning lots of vocabulary and stuff, they focus on how to use a little bit of language in a lot of different situations. So, for example, they use a lot of things like, you know, what do you think of this? Or, you know, how is it that this sort of happened? And rather than using specific vocab and stuff, they try to teach structures that let you speak lots of different things. Okay. And then, of course, then the vocab comes later when you're actually talking to people and you say, well, what does that mean? And things like that. So, I mean, I love Michelle Thomas. The course is fantastic. He's the best, was sadly died, but he was the best language teacher ever. I mean, he took Hollywood celebrities and they paid thousands of dollars. In 3 days, they spoke conversational language. So with the Michelle Thomas course, in 8 hours, you can get, if you can put up, it's a very slow course. And the other students on the CDs have terrible accents. But if you can put up with that and plow through it for the 8 hours, you've got a really good base there.
I've heard the Michelle Thomas course, and you're right. It is a bit of a slow process. And sometimes the other students do get a little bit annoying for me because I'm kind of like, hurry up, you know. My only concern with the Michelle Thomas course, though, is the instructor is not a Japanese. The instructor on that course is, I think it's an English lady, correct? So you're hearing an incorrect accent.
Yeah, I think she's a native speaker. I thought so, but the problem as well with the other two students on there as well is their accents are really terrible, and of course you're hearing them twice as often as the teacher, so right, you're right. Also getting the bad print. But that's the other thing with Japanese though, is that the Japanese accent is so easy to get. It's not that much of a problem, but yeah, it's not perfect, but it's really good.
I listened to both Pimsleur and Michelle Thomas, and I think that if you can dedicate the time to those two courses, they do help quite a bit. They help you become comfortable hearing the language, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and it's nice way they just chop the sentences up as well and just stick little bits on the end. I mean, that's one of the cool things with Japanese is that there's always just little phrases you can put on the end, like, you know, Tomo or things like that or whatever, just that make a whole sentence what you do know, and you sort of doubles up the amount of language you can say by learning one little phrase to put on the end or something.
Oh, really? Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's cool with Japanese as well, because you can always mix it up. You don't have to stick with the correct, you know, what they teach in the textbooks is like the sort of this image of a correct Japanese. There's no correct Japanese word order. You can flip the sentence around and mess it up, and it doesn't matter, and it sounds great. Plus, of course, you know, if you've got a foreign accent, you've got gaijin power anyway. So if you make mistakes, people are more understanding of you making mistakes, which is good.
Yeah, that's always helpful. What were some of the challenges that you faced when you started learning Japanese?
Well, obviously the kanji thing, but that was just time, basically. I mean, nothing particularly difficult. It's not a particularly difficult language. There's no tones or anything like that. It's just a case of, yeah, just you know, taking your time. I think one of the things is when you've been doing it for a while, you tend to plateau. So in the beginning, you zoom up, and then you plateau, and then keeping going through that plateau can be quite hard. A lot of people just stop there, and as soon as they can order three beers in Japanese, they never get any better because they plateaued. And it keeps going as you get higher and higher. You know, I think probably with me at the moment, I was certainly last year I was very much plateauing, and I wasn't learning anything new. And it was like, yeah, okay, I'm happy with this. But then I got a new project, and we were talking about like business and finance and stuff. So I started learning new things, and that's like, oh wow, I can still learn more, which is good. So I think, yeah, if you do it for a while, getting through that plateau was probably a tough one.
Was it difficult for you to learn the formal versus casual Japanese?
But does that really exist?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I've always heard that, you know, Japanese has so many different layers of formality that you have to learn all these different layers.
Okay, it does, but the books make it sound more complicated than it really is. If you can say "Ohayo gozaimasu," gozaimasu is one of the most polite forms.
Right.
Yeah. So people say that all these polite forms come later. No, you know when to say it. It's like, you know, if you're talking to your mates down the pub back home, you're going to talk different than if the Queen of England walks in.
Right.
Yeah?
Right.
And it's just the same thing in Japanese. And, you know, omishiagari kudasai, things like that, you know, as a normal person, you're never going to say that. If you get a job in a restaurant or as an air stewardess or something, you're going to have to speak in super polite language. But you'll get trained to do that anyway.
Right.
So it's not that much of a problem, really.
Okay.
I mean, the only thing, sometimes it's confusing. I mean, for example, the word for you, there's the word omae for
right.
you.
Right.
So it's got O in front of it, the honorific O.
Right.
Omizu and things. So usually that means it's honorific. And I thought that means it's polite. So I was going around talking to people and the mayor of people in my town and stuff and going, oh, my ginkin, I know. That omae was polite. And I got quickly clipped around the ear for saying that. And they say, no, you can't say that. Yoda speaks it in Return of the Jedi. And going, yeah, but he speaks it when he's talking to Luke, not the other way around. Like, okay. So don't worry about it. It's not too much of a hassle.
Okay, that's good to know. Good to know that we can always record to Star Wars if we have a problem.
Well, I'll tell you, when Phantom Menace came out when I was in Japan, so I got the kids' version. That's another good tip. You get kids' books, yeah? Kids' books have the furigana above the kanji.
Right.
So I got the Phantom Menace kids' book when I was here, and it had all the furigana of the kanji, so I could learn all these brilliant words like intergalactic alliance and stuff, which is completely useless but sounded good over beers.
How do you say "May the Force be with you" in Japanese?
Okay, I'm not sure how they translate it in the movies, but I reckon "May the Force be with you" in Japanese is "Yoroshiku onegaishimasu."
Yeah, that's probably true, eh? That's probably true.
It works better the other way around. Cause if somebody says to you "Yoroshiku onegaishimasu." Yeah, which they will do. That means they're saying to you, "May the force be with you."
Yeah.
And when you see all the girls on this podcast, people who don't like Star Wars are going, "What?" And all the Star Wars fans are going, "Yeah, that's cool." So, I'm sure that's where George Lucas got it from. I'm sure he did.
Well, you know, it's kind of, we're going off tangent here, but it's rumored that he based the original Star Wars on that Akira Kurosawa movie, right? I can't remember which movie it was, but the story of the two robots was as similar as the story of the two samurai.
Yeah, Hidden Fortress. Yeah, yeah.
Right, but
it's a word-for-word copy.
Right.
Darth Vader's helmet is a kendo helmet. And obviously Obi-Wan, you know, Obi and all that sort of stuff. It's full of... Oh, Jedi. Jedi itself comes from the Japanese Jidaigeki, which means period play, an old-fashioned movie.
Oh, yeah.
So Jedi. Yeah, and actually, it's one of the cool things about Japanese. If you are a Star Wars fan, which sounds like you are, and I totally am, then there's so much Japanese influences in Star Wars that when you find them, you go, cool.
Let's move on to your YouTube channel, because I found your website first through YouTube, searching for lessons and whatnot, and I really liked all the kind of fun aspect. It's amazing how a song can stick in your head much quicker than a text lesson. You know, I posted recently on my Facebook page that I've been spending so much time in that, what's that camera store? Yobadashi Camera. That song is now stuck in my head that they play. That battle hymn song is stuck in my head now. So I got to stop going there for a while. But tell us about your YouTube channel.
Okay, well, the YouTube channel is it's Genki Japan Net. So it's basically genkijapan.net is the website. So I put it genkijapan.net. And basically I just put up a load of songs. So, and this is how I've got an English program that's my main business. And then we just took some of the songs for learning for Japanese. So we just take some target Japanese, like if you want to learn the counters for people or numbers or colors or weather or whatever it is. And then I just made them into songs that are really, really catchy and just stick in your head. And it's for exactly the same reason, because that's why Yodobashi and everybody does it. That's why every advert on Japanese TV has a song, because it just gets in your brain. And in Germany, they call them earworms, and they just stick in your brain. You can't get them out. So we did that. We made these ones for Japanese. So you just listen to the song. And if you listen to the song 20 times, even if you want to, you will never, ever, ever forget that Japanese. So I think we've got about like a dozen, I think 15 actually songs on the Genki Japan Net YouTube channel, and they're also on the website as well. So, and I think some of them have got several million views. So that's quite good. And I've got a load more that I need to get finished when I get a few more hours in the day.
So, and so your videos, your songs, like what do they cover? They cover numbers, how to say hello, basic stuff like that.
Yeah, we just started off from the basics, the things that I get requests for. Because I think we've got 18,000 subscribers on the channel. So whatever people write into me and we do. So things like question words and like what, why, how, things like that. Counters people are asking for. So I did one for, hitori, futari, sanin, sort of the people counters.
Right.
Colors, numbers, weather, days of the week, months of the year, which are obviously quite easy. There's numbers on there. A load of ones like that. I've got a few more coming up, like things like, what job do you do and things like that. So when I get time to put them up there.
In my experience, when I was living in Germany and when I was living in Thailand, I always found that learning a language it obviously seems very daunting at first. But if you can kind of master one small aspect of it, like being able to count or just being able to say colors or directions, left, right, straight, that really seems to help you get over the kind of the initial fear, and it seems to make learning a lot easier after that. I find I remember I studied French in high school and I don't remember any of it because we started with grammar and we started like right into it right away. But watching these videos and they do get stuck in your head, damn it.
Especially the Mary Had a Little Lamb one that
right.
was stuck in your head all day.
Right. You see all these gaijin listening to their iPods on the train. They're not listening to music. They're listening to Mary Had a Little Lamb in Japanese, But in my experience, it really kind of helps you get over your fear of learning the language, and then you feel more comfortable with these new sounds coming out of your mouth. Yeah, I also noticed on your website that you offer some English teaching courses as well in a similar style. This is for people who want to teach English in this kind of fun, unique way?
Yeah, basically. Well, it's just I started out when I was 16. I started teaching. And then all the things I've been talking about today about how I learn languages – that's all in the Genki English teaching method. So if you want to teach, say if you've got a job teaching English and you want to teach in the sort of way that I've been talking about today, then that's on the Genki English site. And that's actually my main business. So actually Thailand put them, the Genki English packs in every primary school in Thailand.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah. So that was 35,000 schools, which is quite good.
Cool.
And I got to meet the Prime Minister and everything. It was pretty cool.
Did you really?
Yeah. So... that's good. And we're doing a lot of work now, especially in like slum areas of India and China and stuff like that, where kids really need to learn English in order to get into high school and to get into bigger, better courses and stuff. And then, of course, and then to fund all that and stuff, we actually sell the packs in places like Japan, all around the world. You can buy it online from the Genki English website. But yeah, it's a big teaching method. It's basically all how I learned languages, but we'd put it into how to teach it. So we have songs and games and all this sort of everything I've been talking about so far, but in a teaching method.
How does this method of teaching go over with the Japanese curriculum and schools? Because as I understand it from talking to other foreigners who teach here, is that one of their biggest complaints is that the Japanese system is very rigid and that a lot of it's based on rote learning and memorization, and any deviation from that is not encouraged by the school. So then you come along with your fun games and alternative learning methods. How do they respond to that?
Yeah, well, the problem is the system in Japan is actually really, really good. So all my materials, I do lots of presentations sponsored by the Ministry of Education. I do a lot of presentations for the different boards of education. And everything fits in with the Japanese curriculum. The Japanese curriculum actually states a lot of the stuff we've been talking about before, about confidence, getting used to learning the language, do it in a fun way, using songs and games and skits and plays and things like that. The problem is a lot of the old teachers learned 50 years ago and they haven't changed, and the teachers won't change, and that's the biggest problem. A lot of the old teachers are teaching the old set of teaching rules. So actually Genki English was designed to fit in perfectly with – I mean, I designed it when I was in Japanese schools originally. So that's designed to fit with the Japanese system. So it fits in with the system well. You just got to make sure you get a good teacher to work with who actually knows the system, and they're not just teaching something from 50 years ago.
Right. What are your thoughts on kind of like the situation in Japan in regards to English? I remember when I was in Thailand, I saw this study that came out that listed these different countries in their TOEFL rank. And I noticed that Japan was below North Korea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so some people write that off then, just say, well, people in Japan just take it to test themselves, even if they're really bad, whereas in other countries they won't test themselves unless they're good because it's quite expensive.
Right.
But generally, yeah, the general thing in Japan is at the moment, if you're talking about 2011, 2012, then if you're a Japanese person, you can probably get by without English. Hence, there's no real desire to learn it.
Right.
If it's in 20, 30 years time, everybody in Japan will have to learn English or Chinese to get a professional job. So there'll be a lot more pressure on. And it's like we're talking about with the kids we work with in the slums of Hyderabad and things like that. If they don't learn English in the final year of kindergarten, then they can't go to an English medium school. So they fall way, way behind.
Right.
And it's the same in Thailand as well. You know, when we were doing the schools project in Thailand, we got a lot of these girls in the villages and they see, you know, they see these other girls who went to Bangkok and came back with a rich German husband. And they think they're going to go to Bangkok, not realizing what they actually have to do to get that rich husband.
Right.
Whereas if we can give them computer skills and English skills, they can get better jobs and also go into high school and possibly the university, but certainly get better jobs. And so they got more opportunities, so they don't have to go into some of the more dodgier side of things.
Right. That's one thing I really noticed moving from Thailand to Japan is that in Thailand, it is very much a country where speaking English really opens up a lot of opportunities for you. And here in Japan, I noticed that there's very little English, you know, just around. And definitely, like you said, someone could live their whole entire life without speaking any bit of English and have no problems with it at all. But I agree with you that I think in the future, as Japan needs to do more international business, being able to speak language, English and Chinese is going to be very, very important for this country going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing it now with certain companies like Rakuten and things like that. They're making their internal language English. Uniqlo are making their internal language English.
Right.
And that's just going to spread more and more. And from a business point of view, you look at, you know, the Japan economy, the domestic economy is not stable or growing enough, sustainable enough to actually support a Japanese-only language environment. If you're a business in Japan, you've got to look overseas, and that means speaking English or probably Chinese in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to me. Like, I just ordered my iPhone 4S from SoftBank and kind of watching this war going on between Apple and Samsung for the smartphone market. And what kind of struck me about that is there's no mention of any Japanese companies internationally at all. You know, there's all these cell phone companies here, mobile phone companies here, focusing completely on the domestic market. And while that demand is currently strong, they're missing out on this huge global market that they could be completely shut out of, I think, in the future, unless they kind of change their focus a little bit.
Yeah, well, obviously you got, you know, Sony's Japanese,
right?
Depending how you look at it, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first came, everybody had cell phones here, and back home nobody had them, and then it took 4 or 5 years later for the West to catch up, and then it sort of with the iPhone, everybody's leapfrogged over the Japanese technology side of things.
Right,
but it's just the general thing. You just look at in any aging society, there's not the youth that's coming through with the great ideas and the amazing stuff. So, you know, Japan's a really cool place to be at the moment. And I think, you know, if people want to live in Japan, I think now is the best time. You know, they've got the safety aspect is fantastic. Economically, it's still doing quite well, and it's still a developed country. But as Japan moves forward, unless there's some serious political change or demographic change, which is not going to happen, you know, it's going to lose a lot of the shine. And hopefully people will start realizing the good points and focusing more, you know, the really cool history and the cool cultural side of things and focus more on that rather than on, modern Japan is quite ugly, really. Japan needs a nice facelift.
Right.
Traditional Japan is beautiful. And I think we need to make more of that. You know, we need to make Japan less designed by Microsoft and more designed by Apple.
I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, you're shocked by the buildings. I mean, the architecture here. I mean, if the Japan architects were let loose and we have complete cool Japanese ideas, Japan would look amazing. But at the moment, it just looks weird.
I know, like the skyline, it looks like it's just all these boxes, you know? What's that building down in Shinjuku that looks like a giant egg?
I don't know where it is. I haven't been to Shinjuku since they built it.
Okay, because I was down there recently, and there's this one building that's quite round looking, and it looks like some alien egg, and it just looks so cool. I miss all these other square boxes all around it.
I think it's like, is it the National Library as well? If you ever get to see that, that's really cool. It's actually made out of concrete, but it's done in a Japanese shape, so the roof's got the real cool angles about it and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And that looks cool. It is good when you look around and you see it and you see the Japanese bits. And I think if you've just arrived here, you see those. When you've been here a while, you tend not to notice the cool stuff because you've sort of seen it every day. But
right.
It's good when you get people coming over and they go, "Wow, look at that temple there, and look at that there." And, you know, I'm just looking out my window now. There's a huge, amazing Japanese garden down there. That looks really cool. And I wish we could expand that design out to the rest of Japan. Anyway, we've sort of got a bit off topic here, haven't we?
Yeah. No worries, no worries. It happens a lot on Bangkok Podcast, trust me. Well, that's great. Thanks, Richard, for coming on the show. We really enjoyed it. If people want to check out more about your programs, you can check out GenkiJapan.net. And actually, briefly, tell me about your Thai program, because as you know, I have quite a large audience still in Thailand. You have a Genki Thai program as well, is that right?
Yeah, that's GenkiThai.com. And yeah, because I just needed a quicker way of learning some Thai when I was over there. So it's just some of the computer games that we used in GenkiJapan.net, and I just translated them to Thai with the help of some Thai friends. So basic things like ordering drinks and food and I think numbers and things like that. But some basic themes are on there just with computer games. So you learn Thai by playing computer games.
Right. Was it hard for you to speak Thai a little bit? Because Thai is a very tonal language, but
yeah,
much different than Japanese.
That's the only problem with Japanese. You can get up and running straight away. Your first word, you can say it in Japanese, people understand. With Thai, you have to go through a lot of people laughing at you getting it wrong. because when I used to do big presentations and stuff in Thailand, I used to have translators, and all my material is translated into Thai, so they would be doing it, and then I would try and say it, thinking I was copying them really well, and it's just, and then the whole place would just go up in laughter, and I just lost them all. So, but
yeah, it's so funny being a foreigner in Thailand, because the thing with Thailand is they have five tones, and the tone can change the meaning of the word.
Uh-huh.
So you can, if you say a word in a high tone, it means something different than saying it in a low tone. And for many foreigners, it's so hard to hear the difference. So
yeah.
you're trying to, you think you're saying it exactly like the Thai person is saying it, and it's completely different to them. It's like the difference between elephant and plate, you know, like totally different.
Absolutely.
But we hear it the same, and it's so funny for the Thais. It's a little bit frustrating for us, but the Thais are such good-natured people that they just get a huge kick out of it.
Yeah. I mean to be honest, everywhere everyone says everyone in Thailand's really fun and everyone in Japanese is a bit standoffish and stuff, but I think the Japanese people, you give them a beer, they're just as fun as the Thai people. But Thailand's amazing as well. I mean, I love Thailand, and when we were working on the projects over there, Yeah, I'm usually there every year doing a project, so it's really cool as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Thailand is a lot of fun. Just wanted to clarify then for some of our audience who may not be familiar with how to spell Genki, it's GenkiJapan.net.
Yeah. GenKi. So Genki is if you don't know the word yet, it's a really cool word. You use it in greetings, like if you want to say how are you to somebody, you just say Genki, and they go, "Oh, Genki." Hmm. Or if you, for example, if you're not feeling too well, you can say Genki Janai, or it just means full of energy. It's Qi is the you know, like Chinese Qi,
right?
Yeah, or like in Karate Kid, they say that the Qi is like the force, yeah.
Right.
So Genki, I mean the kanji actually means origin of Qi, but it just means your internal energy. So Genkiness is like, you know, you're feeling good, strong, passionate. You want to do it. You know, you're really cool. Really confident and stuff. So Genki is a really, really cool Japanese word. So that's what we use for all the other sites, so GenkiThai.com, GenkiJapan.net, GenkiEnglish.com, etc. Taking
cool.
Japanese Genkiness and spreading it around the world.
Spreading the force around the world. Awesome. That's great. Thanks, Richard. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it. That wraps up another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I really enjoyed the language series, so I hope everyone's getting a lot out of it. I know we got a little bit off topic there, but that's what happens when you get two Star Wars geeks in the same room. So if you want to check out more of Richard's stuff, look for GenkiJapan.net. If you want to check out more Tokyo Podcasts, feel free to visit the Facebook page at facebook.com/Tokyo Podcast. If you want to be on the show or you have a suggestion, feel free to contact me from that website. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.